Welcome to Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
And coming up on today's program, Ken Duncan, not too far away, fabulous photographer that he is, featured on A Current Affair. He's going to be telling us about a fabulous project that he's been working on with World Vision. If you're feeling in the sexual department a little declined or you need to do some self-improvement, Dr. Jacqueline Hellier will be joining us on the program, as well as Dr. Sonia Walker, giving us some great advice today on kids and technology and how much is really enough. And we're also going to be chatting today with Matt Graham about sustainable furniture, really interesting topic. That's coming up in a few moments' time as well here on Mind Food Radio. Thanks for joining us.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
Got today on the show Sandy Rogers, who is the president of ATMS, the College of Traditional Medicine. Hi, Sandy.
Hi there, how are you?
Very good. Now, how many years have you been practicing this?
Well, this year 33 years, so that says how old I am.
So you know your stuff.
Why is our immunity important?
Well, look, you know, one thing that people forget is that the immune system really has to do with every other system. So if the immune system becomes run down, then you're going to be more exposed to disease, illness, cancers. Most people think immunity, cough, colds, viruses, those sorts of things. But realistically, the moment that the immune system drops, every other system of the body is under pressure. So it's really important to focus on keeping that immune system running.
And are there certain foods that we should be eating, you know, to boost our immunity?
Absolutely. Look, the best way to get that immune system up and running and keep it running is using powerful foods as medicine instead of going to the health food shop to pop a pill or the latest immune craze that's out there in a pill or potion. Some of the best things that are out there are things like eating horseradish or having garlic, having the leafy green vegetables. Apples is perhaps one of the most powerful antiviral medications that we've got. So having the apple a day, which really does keep the doctor away because of its high-powered nutritionals. But the more colourful the food, the better it is for the immune system. So keeping that in mind is a good thing. But the other thing, you know, that detracts from immune function is attitude. People have got high stress, they've got a really lousy attitude, like the cup is half empty versus half full mentality. That really does affect the immune system as well. But in the food line, the more colourful it is, the better. The more spicy it is, the better. So it's a really simple way for people to think.
What about the weather? You know, as we sort of get into much colder, you know, we've had so much rain lately. What about the weather?
It's not so much the weather if we've got consistency, i.e., you know, it's cold every day or it's hot every day. But here in Sydney, I'm in Sydney at the moment, I come from Melbourne. We've got all this rain up here, very high humidity, lots of rain, and then the body has to try and adjust and adapt to these climatic changes. So the really, the friendly part, if you will, of the immune system called the T helper cell, it's really trying to keep everything working. The B suppressor takes an opportunity, which is the bad guy, to overrun. So the more your body is struggling with climatic changes, then the harder your system is going to work. So therefore, you need to make sure you stay away from stodgy food, make sure you're really well hydrated and keep the body fairly warm, because warmth is assisting the immune system.
It's hard though, isn't it? Because, you know, when it does get a bit cold and drizzly, you immediately do want those fatty foods.
Yep.
The younger generations coming through, you know, these days are showing a lot more addictive personalities because of the lifestyles that they lead. And they really do neglect their sleep patterns, hydration. I mean, what advice do you have to people listening in today?
I think one of the biggest things that you've hit on there is that in the young consumer market, we're seeing less activity. They sit there with their iPads or sitting inside with computers instead of going out and running outside for 8 hours.
Yeah.
We're seeing a lot of skin conditions and a lot of bone conditions developing. So we need to get kids outside running around more and getting more exercise.
So it's going to be a very interesting society, isn't it?
So we need to get them away from the fast food and back to quality food.
Exactly.
The basic principles are 200,000 years old, and I think we're getting a swing back to that, though.
Fantastic.
I completely agree. Sandy, thanks so much for being part of the show.
You're most welcome.
Thanks again. We've been chatting with Sandy Rogers, president of the ATMS. And, of course, for more details on mindfood.com,
Very interesting, wasn't it, Michael?
Look, it was, and I think there is a real resurgence of people heading back to those very traditional ways of living, you know, having a vegetable garden, you know, getting a compost heap, you know, and then really eating within season and being a lot more aware, I guess, particularly if you've got children, of how you want them to live. And look, it's hard, though. I've got three kids, and it's hard to turn that TV off and get them outside or take the game out of their hand. But I think as parents, that's where we've really got to head.
I tell you what, Rhonda Stewart CDs are fabulous. The de-stressing one, I love.
You know, I like to call them the Mind Food CDs by Rhonda Stewart.
Sorry. Well, they're fabulous.
They are fabulous, and they're very, very popular. So popular that we're actually bringing out four more. And so in the new edition that goes on sale very soon, you've got the ad, but you can phone us up whenever you like and buy them. But the new CDs, one of them is called Mind Food De-Stress, and I'd like to welcome to the show again Rhonda Stewart. Hi, Rhonda.
Hi, Mike and Ben.
Now, before we start, I have to say, last time we spoke to you, you were at a health farm and we were trying to smuggle food in.
Oh, it was a boot camp, Ben. Absolutely.
How did you recover after that?
I've actually found enough chocolate to recuperate.
Do you need to head back, do you?
I do. No, I've actually done well. I've lost 4 kilos.
Oh, that's good stuff. Mm. Very good.
And de-stressing helps as well, doesn't it, to lose weight?
Look, I agree. You know, the biggest problem with that is you never listen to your own CDs. And it actually brings me to mind that I should, because I've got a daughter about to have a baby and the stress is dreadful. So I'm going to drag my own voice out tonight and listen to it.
Well, this one on de-stress is extraordinary because not only do you help people with sort of breathing patterns, but it's also about, I guess, letting go of anxiety and finding a new kind of relaxation. Talk us through, you know, your thinking in and around this one.
Look, you're absolutely right, Ben. What happens is stress is something we face every day, whether it's getting in a car, even just walking out downstairs to have a coffee can be stressful. Mm. So it's something that subtly builds and we don't realize the pressure that's slowly building within us. And then all you need is a couple of little extra this or that, and it just takes it to a level that's very hard to clear. So the aim of the CD is to really start changing the way you respond to all the stresses that you encounter. The aim eventually is that it starts to build a recognition where you start to notice what is stressing you, and it gives you the freedom to start clearing it.
Is it about breaking cycles, do you think?
I think exactly what you're saying is that firstly, becoming more aware and then breaking the cycle of how you responded before.
Is stress something that is man-made or is it just inbuilt in us?
Look, it's man-made. The pressure of life really has escalated. And, I mean, I work a lot with, I do some work with the hospitals and I've created a couple of programs with children. Because we're getting little people at the age of 6 that are suffering things like undiagnosed stomach pain, and it's stress.
Yeah. Then, years ago, we used to call that butterflies when we'd go to school.
Exactly.
Mum, I've got butterflies in my stomach.
Exactly, and now they've exceeded where we were with it, and they're vomiting, and they're doing awful things. Ooh. So, you know, stress is a key factor in that.
Rhonda, thank you. As always, it's great to have you on the show. And as I said before, our new range of CDs, Mind Food CDs by Rhonda Stewart, are on sale now. So till next time, Rhonda, thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking. The perfect gift idea is a Mind Food magazine subscription. Visit mindfood.com today.
Okay, Michael, on the program today, Dr. Danielle Stelvass is joining us. Now, you know, almost 1 in 3 people search the internet for information, I'm guilty of this, about their symptoms before they visit their doctor. New research from the NPS is all telling us about this.
Well, I told you it was only a common cold, and yet you thought you were dying.
Now you tell me.
But the thing is, we all do it, don't we? We all go to the Google machine and tap in what we think we're dying.
I read it and then I go, I can't read it. I don't want to know. I just don't want to know.
Welcome to the show, Dr. Danielle.
Hello, gentlemen.
So tell us, how common is this?
Look, we find some recent NPS research into this area has found that about a third of people with a 1 in 3 report they will check the internet for their symptoms before they go and see their health professional. And I guess the important thing about that is you can't always believe what you read.
Are girls worse than boys?
Oh, look, There is some gender difference, yes. More girls will look at that kind of information, particularly mothers with so many mother sites. But there's probably more of an age difference than a gender difference. So we find that more younger people who are obviously perhaps more IT savvy, but also the old people in that idea that the doctor knows best and knows all, feel a little bit that it's disrespectful or something. They don't want to look like they're questioning the doctor, which of course is not the case.
But don't you think a doctor, you know, who has studied for many, many years and has all that experience under their belt, and when you're not feeling that well, that's what you're paying for. You're paying for that expert, and it's all very well you can go on a Google, but you are not a professional. You don't really know perhaps what you're looking for.
Well, that's right. So there's a couple of different factors in that. The first thing you mentioned about was the quality of the information source. And if you're not feeling well, you may not be able to see, is this information being given to me by somebody who wants to sell something? Is it about hype or trying to get commercial gain on that? Or is the information old? Was it poorly conducted? But the important thing you mentioned about taking it to the health professional who can tailor it about you. So they're taking that information and saying, in this case of Ben or Michael, this is the situation for that individual. You're not actually dying. You do have a cold.
But you know what's scary? What about people that do self-diagnose and then don't go to the doctor?
Well, look, that is a possibility as well. So what we're saying to people then is be able to assess the information. Find something like nps.org.au. We're an independent organisation, not for profit, and we're funded by government to provide independent information. Put that in your favourites, and then you know that anything from that site will lead you to reliable information.
So this is a relatively new issue, though, isn't it, in society? You know, 10, 20 years ago, we never really had this problem where we were self-diagnosing probably as much as we can. Where does it all lead to? You know, do you see a decline, I guess, in people going to the doctor?
Well, no. We're actually hoping that what we see is an improvement in health literacy. We're hoping that people will then start to understand the importance of their health and know the questions to ask, know the information sources to go to, and then know the role of their health professional is about tailoring that information for them. And then, of course, there'll be some people who don't have capability or capacity to be able to look at things like the internet. So we're hoping it's for the good in the long run, but you still have an important role for your health professional.
Do you think it's good, though, that people know more about their body by doing this type of research than opposed to the old days where you'd go to the doctor and the doctor would tell you what's wrong with you?
Well, look, there is certainly a role. The doctors, as you say, are trained to have this specific expertise. But you know your body as well. So what we want is the consumers to know the right information for them and know how to ask the right information as well. So that's about the health literacy. The other thing that's interesting is we pay more attention to what's in our cereal boxes than we do to what's in our medicines. So we're getting people to realise that medicines do have strong effects, that can be good and bad, and it's really important that you understand them and what that means in your case as well.
Yeah. I tell you what, Ben will be running to that medicine cabinet.
I'm actually getting the Kellogg's now. Thanks, Dr. Danielle.
Hey, thanks. That's interesting. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking. The perfect gift idea is a Mind Food magazine subscription. Visit mindfood.com today.
And welcome back to Mind Food Radio right around Australia today. Nice to have your company wherever you are. Our next guest, the Ken Duncan story. Well, in 2007, on a segment on television's A Current Affair, Ken Duncan was described as definitively one of Australia's most iconic image makers. And he joins us on the telephone today. How are you, Ken?
I'm great, mate. Thank you for having me.
Very nice to have you on the show. What does it mean to be described as definitively one of Australia's most iconic image makers?
Makes me feel old.
You've got an interesting story, though, because you didn't always do this.
Well, no, look, I was very much in the photographic industry, in the professional industry, looking at how people would make money out of photography and also processing and all that sort of concept. And so at a young age, I decided I want to do that, and I want to go off and take photos and learn to make money out of what I'm shooting as an art form.
What do you say to young men and women or people that are considering doing a course in photography today? What angle should they shoot for here?
Well, look, courses are okay, but I'd watch out. You know, sometimes people go and do these years of training, but photography is like not like brain surgery. you know, you can actually learn on the job.
Yeah, okay.
And I think it's very important just to get in the industry, because sometimes you can go and do all this training and it just shows you how everyone else has done it. And then it becomes difficult for you to actually go and see things the way you're meant to see them.
Mm.
I believe every person has a unique vision, a unique way of seeing things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, sure, it's good to learn some of the technical aspects and things like that, but I would rather try and keep people as clean or pure as possible so that when they go and see things, they're not being influenced one way or the other. So, yeah, so that's the best advice. Get in the industry. And the hardest part about photography is really getting out of bed.
Yes. Now, you're talking about clean and pure. So in 2010, you joined World Vision Australia's CEO Tim Costello on a trip to India, and something happened there for you.
Well, look, I've worked with World Vision over many years, and, you know, we did a book many years ago called Vision of Hope, and we decided that it was time to do something new, and Tim contacted me, and he's just an amazing man, that guy. And he said, Ken, why don't you come over to with us to India to see what's happening? And, you know, the continued work of World Vision. And I sort of jumped at the opportunity. He said, look, you know, it'd be good to have some help from you creative artists sort of people. And so I went over, and it was quite surreal because at the time, it was at a time when the Commonwealth Games were on, and, you know, people were going for gold and all this sort of stuff. And here we are, and Tim takes me over there and starts showing me some of these projects, like one, for example, like this 2 million children in child slavery in a country in India. And I'm thinking, here we are going for gold, and there's 2 million children in child slavery. Like, how can this be happening, you know?
Mm.
And it was quite a surreal time. And then, you know, he took me to some of the works where they were working with AIDS patients or AIDS people who, if someone has AIDS over there, they're shunned by the whole society. So he was showing me these works, and I'm just seeing all these people thinking, oh, my goodness, you know, this is just, these people are like angels doing amazing work, you know.
Mm.
So I thought, how can we do something? We need to do another book. Let's get another book out there and try and let people know they can make a difference. They can make a change.
It's a beautiful book. It's called Vision of Hope, Mother and Child Book. You can get it at all the great bookstores, or just jump online at World Vision. And, I mean, the money goes to a great cause, and you're helping, well, hopefully a few of those 2 million children that are in slavery, hey?
They can make a difference.
Fantastic. Look, Ken, thanks very much for your time, and we'll talk to you again some other time, hey?
Oh, thanks, mate. A pleasure.
This is an interesting interview, Michael. We've got Jacqueline with us on the line. Hellier.
Yes.
And it's all about intimacy.
That's right. And Jacqueline is a sex therapist. And let's be honest, and we should tell our listeners, we've actually been giggling here like a couple of schoolboys going, we've got sex therapists on the line. But I've got to tell you, whenever we've done a story with Jacqueline or anything like that, it becomes one of our highest rating hits. So I'm really looking forward to this interview. Welcome to the show, Jacqueline.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Now, today we're going to be talking about intimacy.
Yes.
Michael, you're blushing.
I haven't even said sex yet in these
blushes. I know, he's blushing.
It's pathetic, isn't
yeah.
it? But listen, how big an issue is this for couples in a relationship?
It's huge. I mean, intimacy is so vital to you as a couple. And if we look at what a relationship requires, it's like the three pillars. And one's companionship, sure, being friends. Another is being able to run, you know, to manage life together, the logistics and so forth. And the third one is intimacy, passion, love, sex, love and intimacy.
Yeah.
It's that differentiates your relationship from any other relationship.
Why do people, you know, in their relationships, they break down? Is it because of the sexual stuff? The intimacy is lost?
Yeah, it's very, very common. I mean, sex and money are the two main reasons why relationships end.
Yeah.
You know, for some reason, we seem to think that this one part of life, unlike all others, should just happen naturally and
yeah.
be easy. You know, like no one thinks you get wealthy without effort. No one thinks you stay healthy without effort. Yet for some reason, we think we should just like naturally have an easy, uncomplicated, intimate life.
Do you think, though, this is part of society, though, you know, that mm-hmm. we don't, I don't know, perhaps educate our kids at school or we don't talk about it, just
absolutely.
Generally that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I am very, very rare. There's virtually no one out there that actually teaches people this stuff.
Mm.
You get a lot of very, okay, At school, you don't get sex education. You get reproduction education. You learn how to make babies and not make babies. And that's it. Nothing about love, intimacy, pleasure. Oh, no.
Well, because do you think that then falls into the realm of duty of care?
Oh, well, look, I mean, one of the problems that I've seen, because we don't give our young people proper sex education, you know, intimacy and pleasure education, they have to find it somewhere. So, you know, like, when we were young, there wasn't the internet, so we didn't know very much, but we had to basically go off and figure it out ourselves, right?
Yeah.
Some more successfully than others. What's happening these days, the kids aren't getting the education or the information that they need, so they turn to the internet, right? And on the internet, now, I have nothing against porn per se, except that these days it's all that's available to educate people, right?
Mm, that's sad, isn't it?
Everyone's looking at porn and thinking that's what sex is, and it's not.
Mm.
It's
but how do we change that?
Well, yeah, that is a real challenge because, you know, I mean, from my point of view, one of the things that I say to couples right at the beginning is spend a little bit of quality time together every day.
Yeah.
Right? You'd be amazed at how many people don't even spend 15 minutes just having a nice chat.
Yeah.
You know, I say, sit down with a cup of tea, maybe when the kids have gone to bed, for instance, yeah? Or at some stage, make a cup of tea, sit down somewhere nice, maybe play the backgammon or whatever, and just have a chat.
Yeah.
You know, and start to remember why you liked this person in the first place.
But what happens when the chat's no longer there?
You may need to start, you know, doing things again that have commonality. Because, I mean, if you did marry someone for no reason other than you thought they were hot, well, that's pretty dumb. You know, like I said, there were three pillars, and one of them is friendship. You know, like you do need to have interests in common. And it is true that people can grow apart.
Yeah.
You know, like relationships can come to an end, and hopefully you can maturely say, look, it's been great, but we're not meant to be together anymore.
Well, unfortunately, in the words of Sarah Brightman, it's time to say goodbye.
Jacqueline, we could talk for hours. We're going to have to get you back on because there's so much we can talk about. But thank you very much for coming on the show today. For more information on Jacqueline and her book and site, go on to mindfood.com.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
Now, we always get some very interesting topics here on Mind Food Radio, so today we thought we'd get Dr. Sonia Walker, who is the Director of Health in terms of kids' health and the education side of things. How are you, Sonia?
I'm well, Ben, and you?
Very, very well. Now, today we're talking about kids and technology. One of my big bugbears is I'm sick to death of going to restaurants around Sydney and other parts of Australia and seeing families sitting there with their kids on DVD players at the dinner table.
It is a very common sight, isn't it? And it's certainly an effective way to keep children quiet and occupied when we're out in public. But I guess the question is whether that kind of habit that we are forming with our children is doing them any favours in the long term.
In terms of favours, what is some of the research or things that you're getting now exposed to as a result of all this type of technology?
Well, Ben, a lot of the research is starting to indicate that using screens and technology is the most popular leisure activity for Australian children and of course, children in other countries as well. So a large number of Australian children do tend to exceed the recommended time that is advised for spending time using screens and other technology. And as a result of that, they're not perhaps engaging in other activities that are going to broaden their horizons, give them other skills, help them to develop social and emotional resilience, and to be able to form connections with other children and the world around them.
It's a very jaded view of the world when you think about it. By the age of seven, a child born today is going to spend a full year in front of a screen, and over the course of their childhood, youngsters spend more time watching TV than in school. That's pretty scary.
Look, it is, but we know that from the moment children wake up these days, they are commonly exposed to all kinds of technology, whether that's bananas in pyjamas on TV or whether it's the fact that they're handed mum or dad's iPhone while they're sitting waiting in a shopping centre or in a doctor's surgery. Children are very, very conversant with items like computers and iPads, and it is part of their world. Now, that's not to say, Ben, that it's a bad thing.
No.
Technology can be a wonderful way to open children's world up and to give them experiences that they would otherwise not have. But I guess as parents and teachers and health professionals, our focus perhaps should be on ensuring that there is a healthy balance.
So when you're talking about a healthy balance, it sounds quite scary, but you say here something about setting up an agreement with your children.
Look, it can be very helpful for older children to sit down and speak with them about what's reasonable in terms of their computer and screen use. It's fine for children to come home and perhaps watch a little bit of television, but they need to learn to be discerning at some point about what they're going to choose to watch and what has value to them and what perhaps is just passive, sedentary kind of sitting there, just taking it all in. So particularly for children perhaps over the age of 6 and 7, children are quite capable of having a rational conversation and talking about what they really want to do and what's valuable for them and perhaps what's less valuable, helping them to prioritise what it is that they want to see or what they want to do, and helping them to see that they need to balance that with other activities that are going to give them other skills and other experiences. We also need to be mindful ourselves as families and parents that we can fall into the habit of using technology because it's so convenient so that we can get our busy lives happening and functioning well. And so we need to make sure, I guess, that we think about these things as parents and that we have each other's back, we talk about it, and we have a plan in place and we stick to it so that we don't white out each other when one of us is not there, and that we don't set our children up for disappointment or tantrums when they're not getting what they want when it comes to screens and technology.
Well, Dr. Sonia Walker, great advice. Thank you for joining us today on Mind Food Radio. Sonia Walker is the Director of Kids First Children's Services. Thank you very much for your time.
You're most welcome.
This is Mind Food Radio, smart thinking.
Well, today on today's show, we've got Zoe Bingley Pullen from the Nutritional Edge. Hi, Zoe.
Hi there.
Now, you really help people, don't you, in terms of not only being a chef and a food planner, but as we head into winter and it gets colder and we want to eat more, you kind of keep us away from the fridge.
Yeah, look, I mean, for most of us, it's very tempting. It gets colder, the body temperature, you know, trying to keep us warm, and we tend to reach out for those comfort-style foods as well.
And what are they reaching out for?
The energy-dense foods, because we're trying to keep the body warm.
But how do you not do that? You know, when it's cold and miserable out there, how do you kind of get over that?
Look, I think it's important to obviously try and have as much good support around you and good, you know, delicious foods around you. I'm a big fan of comforting foods, but what I tend to do is I'll make, you know, a yummy miso soup, or I might have a really delicious, healthy lamb and bean stew or something that is well satisfied. It ticks all the boxes from being a healthy meal, and therefore I'm less likely to feel like, oh, I need something to sort of fill that void as well.
And from a food planner perspective, do you do a lot of your cooking in the weekend, sort of ready for the week, or do you?
Yeah, look, it really, I mean, I run a full-time business and I teach cooking classes at night, and I've got a husband, but I feel a bit sorry for him every now and then. But for me to be able to enjoy all of that, I find that the weekend is a really critical time, and it doesn't have to be too overwhelming. I might just do one soup or one, you know, fabulous little stew, something really hearty, and I'll freeze it. So at least I've got 4 or 5 meals there. It also really helps me if I'm getting home late, because that, I find, is a really tempting time for a lot of people. You know, we've had a very busy day. A lot of the time, adrenaline can override, you know, our hunger. But when we get home, that's when we're feeling vulnerable. That's when the wine comes out. That's when the chocolate comes out. So we've got something there, delicious and healthy, ready to go.
What about balance, though? I mean, you know, do you think people can balance their lives and have that chocolate and still get away with it?
I think it's all about how to have your cake and eat it too, in my world.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm about, you know, that 80-20 mentality where if I'm, majority of the time I'm being good, there's absolutely nothing wrong with having a little bit of these indulgent foods. We just need to make sure that they are not your overall diet. Yeah. And when you do eat them, forget the guilt, forget any of that stuff. It's a complete waste of time. Enjoy it, savour it, you know, and make it exciting, because it's quite interesting. They did a study and they looked at whether food was addictive, and they actually did a survey of about 40 women. They put them under an MRI scan and they actually showed them a lovely chocolatey smoothie, and then they got them to taste the chocolate smoothie. And what was really interesting is the part of the brain that became ignited and excited when they looked at the picture was the reward mechanism part of the brain. So the part of the brain that goes, oh, when I have that smoothie, I'm going to feel so much better. I'm going to feel really satisfied. But when they drank the smoothie, the part of the brain that got stimulated was the defense mechanism part of the brain, the part of the brain that says, no, you don't need it, you don't need to have any more. So what's really interesting, a lot of the time we put these foods on such a high pedestal, and we expect them to make us feel so amazing, and they just simply can't live up to that.
But I guess also with the whole mix of, you know, the importance of exercise and also portion control,
yeah,
it is a combination of everything, isn't it?
It definitely is. I mean, I, when it comes to exercise, I always say choose the things that you love doing the best. So I do everything from yoga, Pilates, I walk with girlfriends, I do anything that I feel is moving my body. And so it doesn't have to be quite as regimented as what we think. But for most of us, we don't move enough. I think we're really looking at studies now that saying that you need to be, for weight loss, exercising between 6 to 7 hours a week. So that's quite a significant amount of time now. So in an ideal world, we want to be trying to do something every day.
Michael's going for a walk. Michael has gone extremely quiet. That fridge over there is going to get padlocks put on it, so no more chocolate at 4.
Exactly.
Thanks, Zoe. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Head to mindfood.com for more info.
It's Mind Food Radio right around the country. Thank you for joining us today. Well, we love talking about furniture, comfy sofas, desirable chairs, versatile tables, all the things that we don't have in a radio studio, but we love in our home, comfy things, detailed beds and designs. So today we thought we would talk about sustainable furniture, and we're going to chat with a company by the name of Jardin. We've got the National Sales Director there, Matt Garnham, joining us. How are you, Matthew?
Yeah, very good. Thank you, Ben.
I tell you what, you're in an interesting world of furniture. How do you compete in a world where it's all so mass-produced these days?
Yes, well, we produce a premium product in Australia.
Yep.
And we have master craftsmen that have been with us for a long period of time producing a high-quality product.
Mm.
And also, in order to have differentiation in the marketplace, we provide a very sustainable product offering within our range.
Tell me, it's a family business, so it's yourself and your brothers. How did you get into all this?
Originally, the company was purchased back about 14 years ago now,
yep.
And myself and two brothers are involved in the business.
Mm-hmm.
We were involved in furniture sort of back in time, and there's a history sort of throughout the family. We had a furniture business with our grandparents, had one in Glenferrie Road in Hawthorne many, many years ago.
So when you talk about uniquely stylish and made from quality fabrics, leathers and materials, is there a big market for that in today's world?
Yeah, sure, definitely. And I think people are becoming much more discerning now, especially with the sustainability angle, and people are becoming more environmentally conscious in their purchases.
Mm-hmm. So when we talk about the environment, how do we make furniture environmentally friendly as say, compared to your competitors?
Sourcing locally is a big plus, and having has a much smaller carbon footprint,
mm-hmm.
In that you're not requiring products to be imported from overseas to a great degree. All of our products are tested for volatile organic compounds, VOCs.
What's that?
Basically, toxins and cancer-causing agents.
So, Matthew, do you mean to tell me we could be sitting at home right now listening to the radio or at work, and some of our products that are we're working on or sitting around might have things in them that give us cancer?
Potentially, sure. And that's a big push with the Green Building Council, who are producing or promoting Green Star buildings, which is gaining momentum very quickly in the marketplace. And they now have requirements for VOCs for level 5 and 6 star projects.
Mm. I mean, that's something I've never ever thought about, the toxins in the products that we have surrounding us.
Sure, and there was an example recently in London where people actually started getting sort of minor burns from sitting on their sofas that had been imported into England, which outlines that there can be, VOCs and toxins coming into your household through your furniture.
It's funny, when you go and buy stuff, you think that's already been done, don't you? You think in the back of your head, well, these people are selling it and it's safe and it's all there and, you know, we don't have to worry about that, but it's a different world, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And there's massive problems overseas with deforestation and forest practices not being done in a sustainable way, which is, I guess people aren't often aware of the impacts of that, but they are huge.
Well, look, thanks for keeping a local industry alive. It must be difficult in this day and age, but you're doing, obviously, a very good job down there. And if people would like to have a look at your furniture, what's the website?
It's www.jardan, J-A-R-D-A-N, mm-hmm. .com.au.
And that brings to a close our program today. Thank you to Sandy Rogers and Rhonda Stewart giving us some great advice on stress. Ken Duncan as well for his World Vision and Vision with that fabulous Mother's Day present. Check out World Vision and see the fabulous book that they've put together. Also to Jacqueline Hellier and great advice from Dr. Sonia Walker on kids and technology. How much is enough? Of course, if you've missed anything on today's program, jump onto mindfood.com. You can catch it there on a podcast sitting in one of our radio channel pages. And of course, next week we continue with more of our Mind Food Moments. Dr. Ross Walker will be telling us about some heart health advice. We're talking epilepsy with Carol Ireland, as well as Dr. Sue Shepherd and food allergies. All that and more coming up next week right here on Mind Food Radio. Until then, have a safe week, won't you?
Mind Food Radio Smart Thinking was produced in the studio of Radio Australasia. Produced by Ben Starr and Brian Newington and Patrick Kayrouse. Bogart Torelli speaking.